Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Bald Move Prestige. Today, we're talking about the 2011 Adventure Survival Wilderness Man versus Nature movie, The Gray. It's directed by Joe Carnahan, who also has directed Smokin' Aces and The A-Team. This actually reunited the pair of him and Liam Neeson. He's also attached to an upcoming American remake of The Raid, which beyond the scope of this podcast to talk about, but I'm not sure. Yeah, you're making the stink face too. I'm not sure how I feel about that. It's based on a novella called Ghost Walker by Ian Mackenzie Jeffers, and he and Joe co-wrote the screenplay for this movie together. It stars, as I mentioned, Liam Neeson, who is an official graded badass in our Bald Move badass list, for this and many other roles. Also starring Frank Grillo, who played Crossbones in many Marvel Cinematic Universe films. He's led a few Purge films, some of the sequels. He's in Prison Break, a couple seasons of The Shield. Dermot Mulroney or Dylan McDermott, I'm not sure which, is in this movie. Doing a very good impression of my good friend Anthony LaDon, who co-wrote Gods of Thrones with me. When he puts on the glasses and's got the hat on, it's a fucking dead ringer for like Anthony bundled up. Dallas Roberts, who you might remember as Poindexter from the Governor arc of The Walking Dead.
Milton, yeah.
Yeah. Joe Anderson played one of the vampire derps in Twilight, also a lead in Across the Universe. Nonso Anazi, who probably is most famous in Bald Move members for Zorro's Own Duck Sauce in Game of Thrones. He played Tank in Rock'n'Rolla. I hear he's in that new Netflix film or series, fantasy series Sweet Tooth, but I haven't seen that yet. And then James Badge Dale, who recently really impressed me as Robert Leckie in The Pacific. I just finished that HBO miniseries last week, and he was one of the best things in it. Very, very brief scene, but it's nice to see him. Jim, I've seen this movie a couple times, couple three times back when it first came out, and I haven't seen it probably for at least 5 years. What did you think of the film? Have you seen it before, et cetera?
Yeah, I've seen it before. I saw it. Yeah, I definitely didn't see it in the theater. I saw it at home, but I'm trying to remember how far after it came out, how long after it came out. It could have been very long. Movie came out in 2011, 2012-ish. I don't know.
Well, it depends on whether you count the gala release at a festival or the actual official wide North American release.
Yeah, and I remember really liking it. You know what I remember the most about this movie is seeing the trailers and going, "Oh yeah, Liam Neeson, that guy from The Taken, right? The guy from Star Wars, the guy that like he had a very specific set of skills as an actor at that time, and he put them to a great effect in this movie." And so I was all over the trailer. I was like, "Fuck yeah, I'm gonna go see this movie." And I watched the movie, and I remember thinking it was really good. And I watched it again 2 days ago, and now I'm kind of like wondering what I saw in it, other than just like the wolf survival stuff. Because I come away from this movie thinking either there was not enough of the wolf stuff, and they could have done away with all of the philosophical junk in this movie, or they needed to have more of that stuff to really flesh the movie out. And there's some like in-between state that this movie falls in for me, where it doesn't quite get to any of the places it's going. It's like battling between like, "Oh, I want to see the survivalist side of this," versus, "Oh, I want a tale about the nature of humanity and its struggle against the forces of the universe," right? Like, it just doesn't quite get there on either level for me.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to talk about this because I like visibly recoiled when you said maybe take away the philosophical crap, because I'm like, man, that's what makes this film worth watching. I didn't see this film for like a year until after it came back, because like I did like Liam Neeson, like almost everybody in the Taken series, and I watched him in at least two, I think, by that time, maybe the third one. I felt like his star was starting to tarnish. Like, clearly this man will be in anything for money. And they, he's a working actor, there's nothing wrong with that. But like, it didn't used to be like, and I saw him like, oh, he's be running. He's a sniper for wolves. I'm like, this just seems stupid. This almost seems direct to video type. And then I, you know, kept on hearing the reputation. I think it might have been like in early days of Bald Move. People kind of bullied me into watching it. And I was really blown away because. So one of the things like when I was trying to find some kind of philosophical framework to rebuild my life around after I left the cult. I fell into this like men's liberation movement, which was kind of a companion to women's lib. You know, it's kind of like a yes anding feminism rather than a lot of the no bitching that goes on in like men's rights circles today. It's like kind of like, OK, yeah, OK, there's a lot of toxic stuff around masculinity. Let's unpack that. And like, is masculinity inherently bad, or like, can we keep the parts we admire, like the strength and the stoicism? But also get rid of the emotional constipation and the lack of intimacy. And they called that being an integrated man. All right. So if you keep the things that are traditionally masculine about yourself, but you also embrace some of the openness. And I feel like Liam Neeson's character is a good model for that. Traditionally masculine role, but also, you know, he's working through grief and he's not afraid. He's not one to bluster and make threats, but he's also not one to not use physical violence when necessary. And he, you know, is there for men in a real substantial way, his fellow men in dire circumstances. So I was really kind of enchanted with it. The whole kind of like, this is a little bit of a big statement on like atheism, I think, too. There's a lot of that, which appealed to me at the time as well. So I liked it, and it's been a while since I've seen it, so I forgot some of the twists and turns, and I thought it was still emotionally affecting at the end. Like the first time I saw this movie, like it took me a minute to get up off the couch. Like it's, you feel like you've been through an experience when you have no, like, this movie feels like the type of movie that might kill everybody. But also you're like, oh my God, is this going to be the grimmest fable of all time? Like, what the fuck is going to happen? And it did. It left me like really feeling like I fucking walked my ass 300 miles through Alaska being chased by ravenous wolves. I think it still holds up. So there's a couple points where I thought it was going to be silly, like, oh, this is a little for me. But like it kept on kind of subverting my expectations. So I liked it. I can't wait to see, like, dig in a little bit more about what you found unsatisfying about the philosophy bullshit.
Look, I'm not saying that it's philosophy bullshit. What I'm trying to say is I don't think it leans far enough in either of the directions this movie wants to pull me to really hit me with anything. It either needed to go more action Neeson kind of shit, or it needed to go more. I just have like such a huge question about what the hell does this poem from his father really mean in context of his life and his experience with his wife and all that stuff. It left me sort of dissatisfied on that front this time around.
Yeah, I noticed when I was kind of poking around that poem has kind of taken on a life. It reminds me of like Tyler Durden quotes from Fight Club, where it's like, this poem should not be invoked in any kind of like, I am numb, I am a killing death beast, nothing can, like, this is not, right. Like, it completely misses the point of this film in the context to be like, you know, I cannot be harmed, I am a tough guy male, I am an alpha, you know, I'm
first
a sigma.
Rule of Fight Club is be an asshole when you talk about Fight Club.
right. First rule of Fight Club is stab the first wolf in the nuts. There's a lot of people that miss the point. I agree. But on the other hand, it's like, I'm thinking like, what does this movie look like if it leans more into the wolf shit? Because there's already like some brutal, grim shit going on. And the it's like, I think there's mistakes in this movie. I think the poem was one of them. And then we'll talk about, if you guys didn't know, and I found that like, on a informal survey in my Twitter audience, so roughly 70% of people who have seen this movie had no idea that it has an after credit scene. I want to talk about that and what it means too.
Yeah.
But before we get spoilery, maybe we can do that thing where, you know, it's been almost 10 years. It's coming up on the 10 year anniversary of this film, and it didn't make a ton of money. I don't think a lot of people have seen this. Maybe we can talk about what it's about real quick. Mm-hmm. So this movie, The Gray, is actually referring to the gray wolves that are depicted throughout the film that's hunting these men. And it stars Liam Neeson as a person who's paid by the petroleum industry to guard their pipeline workers out in the wilderness. He like works overwatch on a hill with a high powered sniper rifle. If wolves or Kodiak bears come to threaten the crew, he takes them down. We find out through a series of flashbacks and drinking scenes and him scribbling a note that he's got a troubled relationship, perhaps with his wife. His life is culminating into a bunch of regrets, and he's very close to ending it all, committing suicide. But he resolves to live another day, flying back from their outpost in Alaska, returning to the mainland. They hit some turbulence. The plane goes down. There's very few survivors. And they're right in the hunting range of a huge pack of gray wolves in Alaska. Can Liam Neeson get this crew of hard drinking oil rig guys, dysfunctional dudes, whipped up into shape for a hike out of the wilderness and into civilization? Can he protect them without his rifle from a pack of wolves? Will he succumb to despair and numbness? You'll have to watch the movie. It's a hell of a tale. It actually, did you ever read any Jack London growing up, like White Fang or
no,
Call of the Wild?
I definitely saw White Fang at one point, the movie, but I don't remember it.
This matter of fact kind of narrate, it reminds me a lot of like a very adult version of Jack London, you know?
Okay.
And maybe it's just guys fucking around out in the Yukon and like pitiless frostbite type of conditions and shit like that. But I
was thinking it was very noir at the beginning, like when he's talking about I'm on the edge of the world where men who have, you know, long since lost their purpose come to, you know, shit themselves to death or something. I don't know what he's saying, but it's like very noir, very like, oh, cop talking about, you know, the last case he had and how it sapped his will to live, that kind of stuff.
It's very Sam Spade or, you know, the Watchmen, like I had a wife and a kid, and then I saw a baby's head in the microwave, and like, right. What is even civilization, humanity? Yeah. And it leans into a lot of those type of stereotypes. Like there's a whole bunch of things they do in the first 10 minutes of the film that I thought were going to kind of set the tone. Like they introduced this like brainless, annoying guy, and I'm like, oh, he's going to be the real piece of work that's really going to be, and this other guy is the wimp that's going to be the first to get their guts torn out by a wolf. And they subverted most of those expectations. Like the dumb guy is very dumb and stupid, but he's not a bad person.
Mm-hmm.
There's an aggressive guy who is a bad guy, but it turns out he's just full of fear and self-doubt. You know, we're now in the spoiler section, so like, you know, after I explain what the movie's about, if it sounds like a good time to you, then you should go see it right now. But like the nerdy guy ends up being the last guy to die besides Neeson.
Mm-hmm.
If he even does die. I really like that there's just, I never felt like I knew what was going to happen next. And the first time, this movie is just suspenseful as fuck, because again, it feels like one of those movies where anyone could die. It felt even like Deep Blue Sea, where it's like, it wouldn't even surprise me if Liam Neeson died. And this movie's actually, cause you got another star like Dermot Mulroney, who is plausibly a lead that like he could, you know, Liam Neeson, God fucking damn it, I can't say this guy's name. Liam Neeson could die at the 2/3 point of this film, and he's the first stage badass rocket that shoots Dermot to the moon, you know?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
It felt like those things where anything could happen. And because of that, I felt like it was gripping throughout. It's a little bit less so the second time, but I don't know, the way that his wife's story resolves, because like there's a lot of tension about us not knowing about this character, like mm-hmm. what he's all about. The way that resolves, and his quiet kind of reflection about the men, and him just preparing to die in the most badass way possible, it speaks to something in the, you know, chicken soup for the masculine soul or whatever.
I suppose so. I don't know what it's saying now, though.
What is it saying? That's
just
a good
saying
question.
Live a life, because it might be the only day you have to live, the only day you have to die. I'm like looking at it through the lens of this poem, and I don't like the only thing I can say is like the poem wants you to live a life regardless of the outcome. Like try
or just to never stop struggling.
It's the opposite like it's a metaphor of what Yoda says. Don't worry about do or do notting. Just try.
Struggle. You must struggle. Yeah, no, I think that's what it is. Because like that what seemed to be his dad, like his dad was always striving to be better than what he was, who was kind of a drunk and a brawler, but he had the sensitive side. Like the barest crack in his masculine facade that his son could see daylight through and be a healthier individual. But like, yeah, never like no matter how bad things get, keep living because you never know. And then, you know, when you're in, you don't have to, your inn's going to find you. You don't have to go look for it.
Right.
Like, you know, whether it's stepping off a sidewalk into a bus or getting stage four cancer, like you don't have to go out running for it. And like, I thought that's the key. Like what you think is going through Liam Neeson's mind when he puts the barrel of the gun in his head and takes it out and goes back inside. Like to the end of the movie where he's getting strapped up for war with these wolves. I think that is the thesis of the movie, and like what that is hard to articulate. And also, I guess the fact that like that struggle doesn't have to turn you into an animal either. Hmm. You can still have tons of compassion. Like Liam Neeson wasn't a badass because he didn't feel. He's a badass because he could have like spread all these memories of these men and have tender memories with every one of them as almost a ritual to get ready to die. I don't know. Like I said, I don't know what the actual thing is. It's more of a spirit or
yeah.
a feeling than something I can articulate.
I guess that's like where it feels a little dissatisfying to me is I can't really articulate why it left me cold or what I actually think about it because I don't have like a solid grip on it. It's just like this kind of moving thing that I'm trying to grab onto as I'm watching the movie. And I guess that, you know, that could be the point of it, certainly. And that can evoke a feeling in you, but it treads dangerously close to like a David Lynch style. Don't think about this thing. Just feel it sort of thing, you know?
But there's also, so let's unpack some more stuff. Like the biggest asshole, Frank Grillo.
Yeah.
Who's been this posturing punk the whole movie. Gives up.
Mm-hmm.
Does the movie treat him as like a pussy?
No.
I think no, because so it's like, it's not that like you have to like always struggle, but like, because he said like, you know, I gave it a go. I gave it a shot, but like, I know in myself that I've hit my limit. I can't walk another foot and I'm mm-hmm. fine with that because like, look at this beauty. So like, there's also something about accepting your limits too. There's also very self-reliant, like, again, I said, this is kind of like, a peen, like, what do they call that? Like a song, a litany, a psalm, to atheism, because like, you know, like, no one's going to help you if you're not going to help yourself. Mm-hmm. Again, it's almost like this like collection of Aesop fables of like, should you try all the time? And if you can't try, like, then what? Is that cool too? Like face your fear, feel the fear, but do it anyway. The fear is not a bad thing. And like how much harm in the world is caused by people putting up a front, like people that are just scared and probably need help and comfort instead, like put up this front and this wall and try to chase away the fear with violence and rage. Sure. Again, like it's like, yeah, it's like, what's the point of the fox jumping after the grapes and not getting them? You know, it's like sour right. grapes. What the fuck does that mean? Well, it means a lot of things if you think about it and you explain it to a child. I don't know. It's like one of those things, like a film that your father could watch with his sons and daughters and kind of like, this says something about life.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a, you know, over the course of this movie, he goes from a guy who was ready to kill himself, which I have questions about, to the guy who's mm-hmm. willing to survive at all costs, you know,
mm-hmm.
no matter what it takes, he's going to do it. And that disparity between those two men was a little bit confusing to me because the way that they portray this, like this idea that he's going to kill himself is he's snapped out of that by hearing the wolves. I don't quite understand why he didn't go through with it in that moment.
So I think that's,
yeah, I'm confused by that.
Yeah, we're getting somewhere here because, like, do you think that Liam Neeson's character was trying to survive at all costs, or just like fight the good fight, whatever that fight was? And I think that, like, that's almost what, like, I
the
got.
Challenge propelled him forward.
The fact there's still something to live for. For example, like, the wolves baying in the distance reminded him that, like, he is perhaps all that stands between these men and death. He has responsibility to these men. If he offs himself, then, you know, what are they going to do?
I don't know how, like, killing that wolf earlier in the day did not tell him that.
Well, but I mean, it's like when you're at midnight and you're surrounded by these fucking drunk. What do they call these guys? It's not leathernecks. It's roughnecks.
Yeah, yeah.
You're surrounded by these drunk roughnecks or punching each other, and they got not a thought between their ears. And you're like, you know, fuck it. Turns out my wife's dying of cancer and this was brutal. Or maybe dead. I think she's dead.
I think dead. Yeah.
Like this is all a reaction to her, like, this new lifestyle. And, like, you know, you're out there in the cold and you're about to do it. And then you hear, like, it's your purpose. It's almost like your literal purpose calling you. Mm-hmm. He has this calling. And I think it's also telling that, like, he didn't give up, but he no longer tried to get away once it was like he's the last guy. Of course, I guess that's another thing. Like, I felt like the realization they're in the den fucked up the flow of the movie, too, because, like, that's irrelevant to the philosophical. That's like in conflict to the philosophical stuff. The fact that, like,
it was one of the bigger, you know, like, oh shit moments, though. Like, I feel like they overplayed it too. Like, I wish they would have just let us see the bones and not have Neeson say, "We're in the den," you know?
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
I got that. I got that when I saw two human rib cages or four moose carcasses. Like, I understand. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like it seemed too much there, that moment.
That line in the movie is from the movie where Liam, they have a 10-minute battle of him with the wolves, and he wins. Like, it's setting up to the climactic battle in the third act, right? Like, when he says, "Oh shit, I'm in the den. It's time to put on your shitting pants now, boy." Like, but the movie is not about that, so. And it had no interest. I read in the production details that the director claims he shot a full battle sequence of Neeson with the wolves, and it was going to come out on the extra material, but it never has. And people are like, "Did you really shoot several days of?" Because it'd have to be the most expensive part of the film, you know, like
probably,
this, like, battle with the wolves. So, like, did you really do that, or you just was this something you storyboarded and then said? But I don't know, because, like, you said, like, this. Maybe that's what you mean. Like, when you said the movie has to either go further into philosophy, so you're like, actually articulate the lessons you're supposed to take away from it, or keep it at the dumb kind of Michael Crichton Congo level of just action movie, where in that movie, Liam maybe gets away from the wolves or survives or something.
Because I felt the pull of both of those things, but and, you know, maybe this is me just not being sort of attenuated to what this movie is putting out. As far as, like, the philosophy of the film, because look, I'm about as far removed from nature intentionally as possible. I have zero interest in ever being outside, let alone being stranded in the wilderness in the Arctic. But yeah, I just didn't really pick up what the movie was putting down in that regard. I was more interested in the stuff where he's fighting the wolves and trying to survive in a harsh environment, right? Against all odds. But then there was the philosophy stuff that you can't just ignore because it's a big part of the movie. But also, I wasn't, like, picking up what it was putting down. So it was just sort of getting in the way. And I wish I was. Like, I think there's something in this movie that the people who do get it will really appreciate, but I just wasn't picking it up.
Yeah, that's the other thing, is like, when he's down on his knees about to shoot himself in the head, he was thinking about his dad's poem. And it's like, "Last one sworn to the fray, into the last good fight I'll ever know." And maybe it's like, this isn't a fight. This is, like, explicit surrender. And that's the other thing, is like, maybe they're trying to explore that there's multiple ways to be a guy, even a masculine guy, like this, this Frank Grillo guy, maybe gets integrated by the end, accepts his limitations and like sets, you know, drops his walls, finds real camaraderie, cares for the guys, deeply affected by their death. Like, maybe they're trying to say that, like, there's not one better than the other. Like, if Liam Neeson wanted to give up, then that would be a fine thing to do, or at least an understandable something. You wouldn't be like, oh, Liam Neeson killed himself after the death of his wife. What a fucking pussy. I also think that's the other thing is, like, when I watched this thing, I remember thinking, like, God damn, what must it be like as an actor for, like, Liam Neeson, who has lost his wife, and over again, you're asked to, like, hey, remember when your wife died? Mm-hmm. Can you dig deep and find that? Like, because, like, Love Actually is like that, The Gray. And, like, the director specifically in the interview said, I said to Liam, I want you to channel the grief of your... I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ.
Right.
But, like, I think it adds a lot of poignancy to those scenes. Knowing that this guy, it's like the same thing if you're watching a war film and and this never happens, like, you never see a war film and it's like, that's actually the Medal of Honor winner, the fucking stormed those three machine gun nests and took a grenade to the leg, like, fucking shit, he's really, but he does right. know this particular battlefield, and I think that's adds a hell of a lot of oomph to the film that it wouldn't otherwise have.
It does, and Liam Neeson is easily the best part of this movie. I mean, he's fantastic. He's a great actor. I mean, I don't think I need to tell anybody that, but he brings everything, like, a good chunk of what you need to know about this character just comes from his performance and the way he acts around people and in different situations, especially, like, you know, the scene where the guy is dying in the plane after it crashes, and he's just, like, kind of coaching him through the end of his life is really, like, you know, there's a stoicism certainly to Liam Neeson, but also there's, like, caring behind the eyes, right? There's, like, some sensitivity there too that comes through in his performance, not just, like, what's happening on the screen, but what he's putting out there. And I really appreciate him in this movie. He's probably the best part of it.
I think the cast is uniformly excellent.
It is very good. Yeah.
Even the guy who's the massive asshole that you kind of want to die halfway through the film is, like, really, really good at playing that.
Yeah.
But what did you think of that scene? Because that's one where I'm like, if I'm dying, I don't mind a few fictions. Like, hey, man, the medics are almost here. Just relax. It's going to be fine. You're fine. Safe. Yeah, nothing's going to happen to you. Like, I don't know if I need this hulking Irishman. You're dying. That's what's up, mate.
Yep.
You just hold the Grim Reaper's hand. Your daughter's here to walk you through it. Like, what the fuck?
That's intense.
I mean, it's very, you're right. It's like,
bowels.
He's very calming, and, like, that's the other thing about it. I kept on emphasizing our badass debates. Liam Neeson's hands.
Yeah.
Like, when he's holding this guy's head, his hands are as big as his whole skull, but he's, like, cradling the guy's head and kind of not giving him cold comfort, literally just being like, this sucks, but it's almost over and it's going to be easier than you think. And I've seen it happen before. And here's I feel like in the medical industry, they do that more. Like, the last few times I've lost someone who's been planned, like, the doctors and the palliative care team kind of, like, you know, sit to family and be like, this is what you're going to see. This is what usually happens. This is what could happen. And if you see them struggling like this, they're, like, under so much morphine, it's not going to happen. And you might see that. Like, here's how, because, like, it is scary. Like, everyone is going to die, right? But what the hell does it look like? Even in a hot, like, predictable hospital situation. But I don't know about the actual technique. It's more works because he is fully authentic and, like, very commanding. But, like, actually, I don't know. I don't know what a therapist or a psychologist would say about this kind of bedside manner.
Right. I don't know. I really like the scene. There's a lot of good conflict between, you know, the alpha of Liam Neeson and the guy who thinks he's the alpha, who's probably just the beta. Frank Grillo's character. I really liked. I don't know. It felt like simultaneously, like, it was boiling through a good chunk of the movie, but never, like, super overtly. He was just being a dick to everyone. But then it comes to a head, like, almost immediately, right? Like, this thing blows up. They're sitting around the fire, having gone to the tree line, and he just like says, you know, fuck you, essentially, and tries to prove that he's the alpha, gets all up in Liam Neeson's face, and they go at it, you know? And then that threat is like immediately put down in the same scene where we start to learn more about like how wolves operate, right? With alphas, comes out of the woods and stares at them. It's very obvious what they're doing here.
Right.
But like I think it still works. I liked it.
I do. It was like on the border, like now, because like the first, again, none of this I thought the first time through, but now I've seen it a bunch of times and I was like, I'm watching this with my podcaster eyes. And I'm like, that's really hand in glove when Liam Neeson hear this like, and Liam helpfully is like, oh, that was a challenge to the alpha. Oh, he just put it down. And then literally Frank Grillo stands up. I've had enough of this alpha beta bullshit. I think you're just a stupid fucking wolf guy. And Liam Neeson like hands him his ass and is like, okay, yeah, this is how this works. It happens a lot in this film. Like, I think you're supposed to draw the connection between Liam Neeson comforting the wolf in its death, like in the first scene, where he like puts his hand and waits for him to die. And then when he's like trying to take Robert Leckie to the other side and he's got his hand on his chest, cradle his head, waiting for his like last breath. There's a lot of this kind of like, not exactly foreshadowing, but thematic reinforcement. And sometimes I feel like it got a little, that they needed maybe a scene in between just so you don't, it doesn't feel a little bit too on the nose. But again, it feels very effective, especially the first time you're watching it.
Yeah, sure.
The other thing I really liked, and from a like a thematic or a visual storytelling, is I liked the way, and I this feels very Inception. I think this movie came first, right? But the way they have dream sequences like blending into reality, like you know, Liam would drift off to sleep during the flight. And he hit like he's laying on this like white bedspread with his wife, and then the turbulence like literally knocks him out of the bed and into the reality. And then there was another one when Poindexter is it's not Poindexter, it's Mulrooney. He falls out of the tree and he's this fucked up. He's like hallucinating his daughter coming to say, you know, kiss him on the face, and her fair hair is falling on his face, but then you zoom out, like crash zoom out, and it's like it's wolves just tearing into his body as he's dying.
Yeah.
But I kept on thinking that was really effective. Like you've got this like serene kind of visuals and stuff, and just then turns into like the jarring reality. Mm-hmm. I like that.
Yeah, that did work well. There are two moments that were just like gut check kind of things. One was the wolves tearing Mulrooney apart. After the story about his child's hair, I was just like, oh, I don't like anything about what's happening here. That is dark and beautiful at the same time, and it just I don't like it. And then the den moment when he realizes, oh shit, I had to pick a direction, right? Like, and how am I gonna know where their den is? I can't, so I'm just gonna pick a direction and go. And then it happens to be that he took them right into the fucking mouth of the wolf, right? Like, literally.
I think the idea of heading south is sound because, like, in general, the further you go towards the south, the more populated Canada and Alaska gets. But, yeah, he was like, right at the edge of the wolf's hunting radius, and they're walking straight to the middle.
Right, and when you realize that they've been going, technically the right way, but definitely the wrong way the whole time. It's just like, fuck.
Yeah, and that's where it's like, I feel like some of the message of the movie gets muddled when, because it's a little bit more nihilist than I think it means to be. Like, without the realization that he's been walking the wrong way, like, you can make the argument that this whole movie was a mistake. They should have stayed in the plane and maybe froze to death, but they would have been...
Sure.
You know, they would have had protection from the wolves, and, you know, they would have died rested, I guess. They wouldn't have died exhausted, like walked off their feet.
Well, I mean, it's the same thing they tell you when you get lost in the woods, right? Is like, look, don't go just wandering off in a fucking direction, because you could be wandering away from the people who might have known where you were. Like, stay in your last known location, right? Or close to it.
Yeah, I thought that they didn't set up the survival situation, because you're right. Like, Well, he's like, oh, they'll never, you know, there's like these dueling narratives of like, well, the company doesn't care because if we all die, they save a bunch of money.
Right.
And also they just don't care because there's this a huge space. And but like, I don't know, we got a flight plan and surely these guys called Mayday a time or two. And we're probably saying what air, like, I just feel like it was definitely the right thing to stay with the plane.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, there's a transponder, but like, I don't know that the movie, like, I think the movie wants you just to believe or needs you to believe that like, there's no transponders. None of that happens. These guys are just all alone. But like, yeah, I just felt like the actually what you were doing is walking ever more into danger. And like, that's, I don't know. Sometimes that happens in life. Right. But what, again, it muddles the journey of the film, which is like, always take your, you know, always try, always keep struggling until you can't. Right.
Yeah. I guess that's the moral of the story. That's certainly what I was like thinking when I came away from it. It was like, okay, maybe this poem means that. And I guess it does.
Also, like, the importance of keeping your humanity, because like the only thing that like Liam Neeson really rode hard on is that guy. What, grave robbing, you'd call it. And he's giving a lip. And he's like, I'm going to start beating the shit out of you in 5 seconds and you'll swallow a lot of blood over a billfold, which again, it's like, it's not a bolt. It's not a boat. It's just as him saying, like, this is what's going to happen if you keep fucking disrespecting these men's corpses.
Mm-hmm.
Why was he hell bent on collecting everyone's wallet? It wasn't just to make a cross in the ground before when he died in some kind of badass display.
No, I think he wanted to like get out of this situation and take them back to people and say, hey, these are, you know, the people who were lost here. I don't know.
It seems like they have a manifest, right? Company's keeping records, you know?
I would think so. Yeah. So I don't know. The movie wants you to think that that's significant. And it is emotionally like keeping those people with you, right? Is like a thing, you know, symbolically and emotionally, but it's like really, it would not be a thing because they know who's on that plane.
It made sense if he was doing it with all the guys that survived and like, you know, want to remember these guys. And that's kind of what they do in the end anyway. Like he goes through all the wallets of the essentially 6 or 7 guys that made it off the plane. So like, yeah, because I was kind of like on Grillo's side when he's like, we're wasting time here. It's like, yeah, what? I don't get the whole wallet thing, you know?
But I like most of the survival stuff, but there are also scenes where these people are clearly like not paying attention to the movie because or don't know what movie they signed up for. And granted, I know these are characters, but like, they are being actively hunted by packs of wolves. They know this because several of their, you know, plane buddies have been killed already by wolves. And when they hear something out in the woods, they're like, what's that? Or when they see a figure behind them looming, they're like, what's that? What do you mean, what's that? Are you paying attention to the fate of the last 3 crewmen that died?
I think it's more of like, because like it's a thing. If you're ever go camping in a wilderness and you hear like a coyote howl, it kind of sends a little shiver down your spine. Even though I know. Like and like the only reason I don't completely lose my shit is that like I know that there is realistically nothing in the places I camp that would like even a pack of coyotes wouldn't fuck with me. Because they're like little boys, they're like 30-pound dogs. You know, they're like just fucking start kicking and stomping, they'll go away. But like a fucking wolf pack, like I'm thinking about what it'd be like to be in the Yukon and like the light, your fires and you hear that howl in the middle of the night and it's close. Oh, yeah.
That's terrible.
So like I think it's like when I think it's like when they're saying what's that, it's not like, oh, my God, what's chasing us this whole movie? It's more of like, is that a chipmunk? Is that a horseshoe hare? Is that a deer or caribou? Is it a like, you know, because like a lot of things make noise in the woods. There's all fucking like the woods are fucking loud, man, especially like in the summer. It's busy in the winter. It's just everything you can hear so easy. But
yeah, it was really like the part I can remember it because like one of the guys goes, what's that? When they're out in the middle of the tundra. And they're headed for the tree line. And one of their dudes just got picked off the back of the line, the back of the train here by a pack of wolves. And then they see some stuff in the distance. And they're okay. Like, what's that?
Okay.
Like, you're pointing right. to figures. I'm like, are you fucking insane? What do you mean? What is that?
Those are the wolves Wendigo? That
are what? Eating you one by one.
A Yeti? Come on. Yeah. Right. Okay. I get you. You got
in it. In the woods, I get it more because, yeah, like sounds. You hear twigs snap, right? You'd be like, what's that?
There's also the other thing I thought is at odds with the message of this movie where, like, Liam Neeson at the plane wreck doesn't seem like he really knows what he's doing. There's a scene where he's like, we should walk through the woods. And they're like, fuck, why? Mm-hmm. He's like, we'll be better protected or less exposed or I don't know. Fuck it. I'm going. If anybody wants to go, follow me. That's yeah. That line there and him walking into the den. I don't know, because it seems like it is at odds with the thing in the movie. Like, why, if he doesn't know why, then is he trying to take it on himself to lead these guys into a particular direction? It's like,
yeah,
kind of his hunch or a gut, but it's weird because everything else is very meticulous and he's got real good wolf based reasons. Although there's a big asterisk because since this movie's come out, I think there's been a lot of like reexamination about all this alpha wolf crap. And like most people, I think, say that it's not. But then the same types of people that go around saying, well, actually, this alpha business is a bunch of bullshit and was always overrated. Like, they're going gaga over this chronicle of this one particular black wolf from Yellowstone. There's, like, someone wrote, like, an heavily anthropomorphized account of this real-life wolf's rule over this big wolf pack in Yellowstone. And everybody's talking about, oh, what an alpha, what? And I'm like, but I thought in the last 5 years we said that alpha wolves are kind of bullshit. Like, the strongest wolves tend to do the most hunting and make sure, but, like, it's not like they just lord it over the pack. It's like they got lots of responsibilities. Like, it's their job to make sure everyone's fed and their job to protect people. And, you know, it's not like one guy calling all the shots and all the other. But I don't know, because this movie leans heavily into, you know, oh, they sent the Omega Wolf. They sent the bitch soy boy wolf out to take you on, Grillo, because they don't respect you as a man.
Like, right.
I don't know where that's coming from.
Yeah, I also read, you know, that it's not super accurate, even with the stuff that, you know, we do understand about alpha and pack dynamics, because, like, alphas basically wouldn't attack him at the end. Like, there seems to be some personal vendetta that the alpha has against Liam Neeson in this movie that makes it behave not like an alpha wolf and more just, you know, like the Frank Grillo asshole character.
Yeah, as I was watching, like, again with my podcast brain on, I was thinking, like, this is almost Peter Benchley levels of irresponsibility versus as far as, like, whipping up a species hatred. You know, like, he wrote Jaws.
Oh, sorry.
The guy that wrote Jaws, and he's since, like, apologized because he's like, you know what? Like, this has actually done nothing but harm sharks, and it sucks because, like, there's not that big of a chance, blah, 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 blah. I think this movie would be that. Like, it'd be a lot of people outraged, but I just think that most humans, we fucking won the wolf war, man. We pushed them into essentially the places we don't live. Like, the only time we're going to run into them is we're going to run a goddamn pipeline from the middle of nowhere to a seaport in Alaska. Like, we're just, the average family is not going to see a fucking gray wolf on the ranch to, like, murder for no good reason. Whereas sharks, you know, people, like, there's a whole hysteria about hunting them. And there's, but anyway, like, I read that there was a lot of, like, animal rights activists that were really outraged about, like, well, this is stoking up a bunch of hatred and violence against an endangered species. It's not protected by many endangered species lists, and, you know, used for wolf carcasses as props and blah. And I think that would have actually taken off, except for, again, just wolves don't live where we live. So,
yeah, you might be right.
Yeah. They're either got radio collars on in Yellowstone or they're living way up in the fuck you Yukon where with Jesse Pinkman, and they're not spending any time around people.
And they really make the alpha wolf look intimidating and almost like artificially so. I don't know what an alpha wolf typically looks like, but this wolf looks like almost like it's covered in oil or something the first time you see it, right? It's just this inky black figure. Even when it's in the light. And I was surprised by that.
It's the size of one of the stark gray wolves. It's like, it looks big enough to ride. I know they use, like, forced perspective on it and stuff, but
it looks
like it stands shoulder to shoulder with Grillo.
Yeah. And I know wolves are big, but they're not that big, right? Like, they're not 6 feet tall. Yeah.
Wolves do get like, sometimes wolves do get big, but like, yeah, they do. This was which felt again, very much like Jaws, you know, an exact, like take a kernel of the truth and just make it bigger and more sensationalized. And, I thought that, I really liked also how you got, they gave this idea of like the humans being the prey animals, like panicky prey animals, like the wolves would come at them. The humans would start running naturally. The slower, less fit would go to the back, and they were the ones that were picked off. And this, like, I thought that was cool because you don't usually see a realistic depiction of humans being hunted. You got stuff like Predator, where you've got like some big fucking alien, and you got things like that. But like, you know, being hunted, there's not a lot of movies that tap into that kind of primal fear. We haven't personally faced it for like generations, most of us, that like, you know, being hunted by a tiger. Or like a pack of wolves, and there's more wolves than you, and you got not enough food and bullets, and it's a bad deal.
Yeah, we were talking about this movie just a little bit in like broad terms a while ago, and I told you that like I didn't like it as much as I did the first time, but it's probably because I've seen things like Revenant since then, which I think Revenant is awesome. And it does this sense of like, you know, survival and fleeing for your life in such a more visceral way than this movie. This movie didn't feel it. I don't know. This movie is halfway between like something you'd put up as like a popcorn action flick. This is the thing that's tearing me, is like, it's somewhere in the middle between like a Revenant and a fucking Fast and Furious movie, right? It's like, It wants to be this like action-y kind of like thriller sort of thing, but then it also wants to have like this heart and this like intense philosophy discussion about nature and humanity and all that. And somewhere in the way it gets lost for me. It just like doesn't satisfy either of those urges.
I wonder if, because some of the stuff they did with the wonky wolf stuff, like positing like wolves are like someone just in the middle, like I don't even know who it's like. Wolves are the only animal that seek revenge. And like, he kind of like, who said that? Was that in the script? Like, because they're just kind of like inserted in there because like they're juicing up. Like, like you have this battle between the alpha wolf and the alpha man. And, you know, they got their sigmas and omegas and betas and all that shit and everybody. But that gets in the way of like the philosophy. And I don't know, like you also could get rid of. But I think that the action stuff, because. Like one of the things I want to ask you is like, what is leaning more into the wolf action look like? Because it's got plenty of wolf action. I just think that they sensationalized it a little bit, not in the actual like men getting torn apart, screaming kind of way, but in just to like, oh, this is personal for the wolves.
Mm-hmm.
When really, I mean, I guess that's the one kind of saving grace of realizing that you're walking into the den, because it reframes the wolves as like the victims and the humans as the accidental aggressors. Like the wolves are like, Jesus fucking Christ. We keep coming at these guys and they keep coming at us, you know, like we're trying to like, you know, get them away from our home and they're coming right at our cubs. They got these fucking bang sticks and shit.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck. What are we going to do? But that again, it's like that's a story you could tell, but that's not the story you're telling. And throwing it in at the end kind of like fucks it up. I thought it would be scary if the wolves were just like animals. They're not doing this because they want revenge. What the fuck revenge are they wanting for? You tore apart when they're Omega.
One of the sacrificial
shit tier wolves. Yeah.
Yeah. They sent that at you, like testing you to see if you could do it. So
no, what's scary about animals, it's like, is that they're animals. You can't reason with them. You can't like say, hey man, come on. You got cubs. I got kids. Come on. You can't, they don't give a fuck.
And stripped of all the things that make us a formidable threat as humans, like our ability to use tools, right? And in our big ass brains, that's where we become like defenseless in the face of these things. And that's what they do, right? There's a very conspicuous shot where he finds his sniper rifle and he picks it up and it's just busted in half. So they tell you, hey, you're not going to get any, you're going to survive this if you survive it based on your big ass brain, not your ability to use thousands of years of historic tool making.
Yeah. Yeah. Although I did think there was a lot more they could have done with spears.
Oh, like, sure.
They still had five or six guys left and they're making
cool, but
That's good, but like honestly, yeah. Five or six guys with 12 foot sharpened sticks. I don't know what a wolf pack does to that. Like,
yeah,
they would have to make a very determined and uncharacteristically wolf pack, like, because they don't usually come at you like a fucking wave. It's usually like one or two to try to trip you, knock you down, then they go for the throat and all that stuff.
I guess that's what I'm wanting. Kind of like, yeah.
Yeah, like kind of turtle up and every guy's back to back and you got a stick and like one of the lone wolves come in, you just give him a fucking step. Like, you know, essentially, as soon as us monkeys picked up sticks, it was all over for the rest of these goddamn animals. Like, that's it.
That's what I mean. Like, I wanted more of that. The brain and the thumb,
we got them.
That MacGyver shit, right? Like, I wanted more of the survival stuff if it wanted to lean that direction. And it only leans halfway there, so it wasn't super satisfying. But like, they also depict these humans as like not very well organized, which I think is fine. You know, it's a group of
panicky prey animals,
people on the edge of the world who all fucking hate humanity and they're outcasts. So of course they're not very like well behaved as a pack here. But there were several times where they left a straggler behind and that straggler got eaten. They don't do the thing where like, hey, if you guys have like a injured member of the pack, like a fucking gazelle, right? Gazelles do this. All animals that know how to survive do this. They will surround their wounded with their healthy. And they don't do that in this movie, right? The humans aren't smart enough to do that. And I don't know if it's trying to say something about like humans are so far removed from nature at this point that they've lost all the skills that would help them normally survive in a situation like this, or if that's just like the movie is trying to say this particular group of people is not very organized. I don't know, man. It was a little confusing to me.
And that's where like the kind of like survivalist in me was kind of nitpicking, because like, okay, make it to the tree line. You got an unlimited source of trees now, pine trees loaded with the tar and flammable shit.
Yeah.
Just keep a big fucking fire going.
Mm-hmm.
Build, you know, like they had
fire the North's ever
stuff.
Seen, and let the planes.
Yeah, start
it,
a big fucking bonfire. Get a bunch of sharp sticks, but like I think that the movie wants the men to be vulnerable. They want them to be panicky prey animals because they want to put the pressure. And they want to show like the different ways that men break and the different types of men and how they break. That's fine, but you're right. I had to turn off a couple parts of my brain to fully enjoy it. And there's like a couple other stuff, like the cliff jumping shit I wasn't so sure about. Like, I felt like that was kind of wildly implausible, just throwing Poindexter off a cliff and hoping he grabs a tree. And
yeah, and the way they shoot it, it seems so far away.
It does.
Like,
seem
I'm
crazy.
Not sure an Olympic gymnast could jump that far if they were like a long jumper.
Right. And then, like, do I believe that Grillo can grab onto that sheet and hold on to it as it's falling? There's a couple of things I thought went a little too Bear Grylls survival, where he's like, you know, I'm thirsty, I must drink my piss, or like, oh, I'm on top of this 300 foot waterfall. There's no way down. I'm going to have to jump off of it. Like, that's just insane. You wouldn't do that in a survival situation. You would like start walking parallel to the cliff, looking for a switchback or something, some way down. You wouldn't just be like, oh, we got to this cliff. There's the river. We need to get there. You know what? Let's fucking jump over to the trees.
Bear Grylls doesn't have like the wolves telling him to drink his piss, right? Like, you either drink your piss or face the wolves. I'm probably gonna drink my piss.
Got your back to like, you got your the cliff. That's a defensible point. You know, the wolves can't skit behind you. That's half their game.
It's true.
You got five guys with sharp sticks. You can hold that fucking ridge line up. But, you know, that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, yeah, you're still inside the plane. You're in the tree line. Cut down some trees. Set that shit on fire. Get a smoky fire going, a signal fire going.
Yeah,
but I don't know. I guess that's where I can see your point about, like, the movie needs to either go a little bit more gonzo and be an action flick, or it needs to, like, be a little bit more believable, because I guess that takes away from the philosophy. It doesn't for me, but I can see.
I guess maybe not. But yeah, again, I wasn't picking up what it was putting down in the philosophy department either. I really do like the plane crash sequence. It's one of the more visceral ones I've seen.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It was cool, right? Because he's doing all the smart things. I don't know. Maybe this is, I'm about to go negative here again, but like, They show him being so smart with this plane crash, buckling himself in three times with all of the seatbelts in his row. And these other guys being doofuses, right? Just kind of like bashing their heads on the ceilings, getting hit by flying luggage. So he's clearly like super smart in that regard and a survivalist and knows his shit. Then when he gets on the ground, he's not quite as smart. But like that plane crash is really visceral. And I kept thinking like, man, what if they just, has there ever been a movie that has shown a plane crash sequence where the survivor of it didn't lose time? Didn't like crash and black out and then wake up somewhere else or in the rubble? Have they ever followed like a survivor that stayed conscious during that whole thing? Because that could be interesting.
Yeah, like certainly not Castaway. I mean, does that count because he like survives a crash, gets to he doesn't like pass out until he gets to like a place of safety, and then he wakes up on the beach. But he's fully conscious as that water thing goes down.
Yeah,
he starts to go down the ship. He has to get free of it. You know. But he does. They do have the passage of time where he like falls asleep on the boat and then wakes up in the.
You're probably right.
Reef.
That might be one. That one is also very visceral. Yeah.
Yeah. And I wonder if that's like how it also would feel too. Like it's so violent and it's so fast and so loud that you're just getting these fragmentary experiences.
For sure. Yeah.
I feel like the plane might have broken in half because like there's this daylight, you know, and he's like upside down. Like,
hanging his head's hanging out the side of the thing. Yeah.
It's a good thing he was triple belted. He might have been dead. Also, pro tip, if you think you're gonna go down an airliner, be kind of a boorish asshole to the person sitting with you. Drive them off so you can have the three seats to buckle into.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Just cut some beefy farts, wait for the stewardess to move them or steward to move them, and then you got the three buckle safety. At least if it's not a full flight, that's not gonna work. But I want to talk about the post credit scene.
Okay.
Because I was well into my research when I came across someone mentioning, I think it was like, yeah, it's one of the last things I do is read the Ebert review. And he mentioned about like stay through the credits because there's a final scene. And I'm like, what the fuck? There's a this movie like three or four times. What is it? What are they going to set up the expanded Wolf cinematic universe? MCU, the Neeson cinematic universe. A Russian wolf comes and steals his daughter. But there's an after credit scene like all the way past the movie. It's like maybe 5 or 6 seconds long. And it's the alpha, like, okay, so go watch it, because this might be a spoiler for it, because, again, no one knows about this, apparently. But there's a brief scene of the alpha taking labored breaths, and then as it pans over its body, very close, all you can see is, like, the ridge of its back. You see Liam Neeson's sweaty, bloody head up against it, and you don't know if it's actually... just the top of his head. You can see his hair and it's moving, but you don't know if, because like they also earlier in the film introduced the idea of that. I think it's the Inuit woman. He thought it was someone alive because she was moving around, but it was just a dead body that's getting its guts ripped out by the wolf. I hate this scene. I fucking hate this scene. I wish I didn't. I wish I could Man in Black my flashy thing myself so I could forget about it, because it, I think, does a lot of damage to the end of the film, which I think is otherwise superb.
Do you think it does damage? Because I don't think it does anything. I think it like half answers the question you have, but in doing so, doesn't answer anything.
Answer? The end of the film is him charging once more into that last good fight. I don't need to see the partial results after round three, you know?
No, but the thing they're encouraging you to do is say, which one of these do you think won? And I know that's not like the philosophical point. The point of it is, yes, he's living, dying on this day, whatever. But like everybody who comes out of this movie is going to have the question, like, did he beat this wolf? And the movie doesn't really answer that question because you don't know if Liam Neeson is alive. You only know that the wolf is probably dead and probably
mortally wounded. Yeah.
It's not attacking him. It's breathing, but it's like, you know, if the wolf would continue to attack if it could, so it's dying.
Yeah, it sounds like very ragged, like its lungs are filling with fluid kind of breathing. Yeah,
but we don't know the fate of Liam Neeson, so why like, it doesn't answer the bigger question that I have, because I'm not like questioning like, oh, is the wolf going to survive this? I'm questioning, is Liam Neeson going to survive this?
Well, that's the thing is like that. That's the thing is I question. I know maybe you did, but I walked out of this movie experience like once I got myself off the couch. I never wondered if Liam Neeson died or not.
No, I think he's dead. He did. Yeah.
Yeah. And now this movie kind of like. And I don't even think he kills the alpha. I think he just like, you know, he might get a couple sticks in and I, but it's again, yeah. The movie's about how you face death, not if you survive or not. Mm-hmm. And the end of the movie kind of pulls it back into like, this is, you know, like people had strong feelings either way. And I don't know. I feel like I didn't have that question. I didn't want it answered. It's a shitty answer to it. What was the point? Like, is that the cherry on top of the sundae? Because it didn't feel like it.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I don't like the scene either. I didn't know it existed until this morning when you said, hey, did you know this thing has a post-credit sequence? I'm like, what? Right.
Yeah, sometimes you don't like it when Charlton Heston like hits the knees on the beach and says, you blew it up, you maniacs. I don't need a post-credit scene where he turns at the camera and's like, and by that I mean my contemporary man. You know, like, it's like, yeah, we get it, man. We get it. And it's just such a great scene of him, like, just eyeing down the wolves as they're coming in. And he's got the airline bottle. Like, this is almost, I think they parried this ahead of time in Hot Shots Part 2, where he's dipping his hands in, like, the caramel and the gummy right. bears and the sprinklers. But, like, he's got... Yeah, he's airline bottles of booze between each finger. He's got a knife in his other hand. He's duct taping him to his hand so he can't drop him, which fucking brilliant. Yeah, uh-huh. If you just want to go out maximum damage to the wolves, do that.
It was cool
because again, it's like I thought it was like some kind of bravery in the face of death. Like you're not going to go quietly into that night, you know. I feel like they wanted the rights to that poem and it was denied for some reason. So they're just like, well, let's essentially do the Muzak version of that.
Yeah.
But like I said, I don't know. It felt right from an emotional tonal perspective. And I forgive a lot of its other flaws just because it is so satisfying. And I don't know if you don't identify with this particular philosophy or if it doesn't speak to you, then maybe that's the reason only made like $80 million. That's the other thing. When I found out how much it made, I was shocked. I thought this was a bigger hit of a movie.
Yeah, I mean, it made a good amount more than its budget. It wasn't like a flop or anything, but...
Right.
Yeah, 2011, $80 million worldwide box office. That's okay.
Maybe it's just the worldwide stuff because it's a very talky film. And I hear that's one of the reasons like the big sci-fi blockbuster type stuff works so well is because like it's, you know, the dialogue in a Marvel film in a very real way doesn't matter. And it's just a big action scenes doing the heavy lifting and like the broad emoting and all that. So like but whereas this, I guess, yeah, like this is very, very talky in between the exciting wolf action parts. All right. Well, what else we got to say about The Gray?
Nothing.
I love it. I think Liam Neeson's a big badass. One of my favorite films of his, and I'm glad I got to see it again. Getting real close to its 10th anniversary in January. It'll kick over 10 years. So
yeah, I didn't hate the
anniversary party for it.
I know. I talked a lot of negativity about it, but like, I didn't hate it. I just didn't. It didn't quite get there for me. Overall, yeah, if you watch this movie, you'll probably like it at least the first time.
I'm not sure. We might cut all this out, but like, what do you think changed? Cause you really liked it the first time you saw it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's just like literally seeing the visceral experience of seeing Revenant is just like, you can remember like that bear tear. It's like essentially a super wolf tearing into, Liam Neeson. And plus there was like, not Liam Neeson, Leonardo DiCaprio. Like what is it that like, change in the last 10 years? Was it you or is it cinema?
It's probably a little of both. And also like, you know, seeing something the second time when you kind of remember a lot of the beats, it's just not going to hit you as hard, right? It can rekindle like what you loved about a thing, but if what I loved about a thing was like halfway to the finish line, then like, I might not notice the first time, but the second time I'm definitely like looking at it and saying, okay, it's probably just a podcaster mentality of like holding this thing up, examining it.
Yeah.
You know, trying to like gauge my own feelings about it in real time as I'm watching it. And like that can get in the way of a lot of stuff, just like enjoying it. So
yeah, and Revenant, I think the thing that works about it is like it's because the antagonist and protagonist are both people. Uh-huh. And like it's a clear, much clearer cut of just revenge. Like is a despicable person. This is a guy who's in a good person in an impossible position, and they got to try to like survive. And it's man versus nature, but very man versus man, where this is all there's a little bit of man versus man, but it's essentially alpha versus beta, and the beta gets put in its place. And
the world keeps like rolling. 2 minutes of the movie. That's not a significant part of it.
Yeah, then he becomes like part of the pack, and the movie keeps it. So I think that's inherently more compelling. But this is a lot more philosophical, I guess. And I like that.
It is. Yeah. If I had been attuned to what it was doing philosophically, I probably would like this movie a lot more.
That's what we thought about The Gray. I hope you liked this look into another prestige film. We'll be back next week with another one. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.